Said you're gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river. Shoot me down, put my body in the river while the whole world sings. Sing it like a song. The whole world sings like there's nothing going wrong. He shot her down, he put her body in the river. He covered her up, but I went to get her and I said, my girl, what happened to you now? I said, my girl, we gotta stop it somehow. Sick and sad. Tell me what's a man with a rifle in his hand gonna do for a world that's all gone mad? He's gonna shoot me down, put my body in the river, cover me up with the leaves of September like an old sad song. You heard it all before. Gone, but I'm settling the score.
This is Nasa.
And this is Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks for tuning in. And it has been so long.
So long.
It's since we've been in the same room recording.
The long-awaited return.
I know. Oh, my goodness. I hope you guys are ready for this.
You ready for this? Bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum. We're ready for this, yeah. I think. So in light of current events in the world,
woot woot,
world united in many cities across everywhere.
World united against one man.
Against one man. So
one regime.
If that's the result of this, then we're okay.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful about it. It at least seems like we are, like, the things that have been put in place in the past 100 years to prevent somebody like this from being so destructive are seeming to take root and, like, be useful.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful.
We're breathing breath into lots of movements. Mm-hmm. And I keep coming back to so many things in these times, but one thing I keep coming back to is the last episode of the John Oliver is the host. It's one of those midnight shows.
Yes,
you know, he kind of
last week tonight,
which it's one of the few ones I watch.
Yeah.
And he, you know, had kind of a bunch of organizations of, like, if you care about this, go here, if you care about this, go here. So good resource for a lot of information quickly. But then he kind of ended of, like, but also think about your lives and think about the people in your lives who are vulnerable right now and mm-hmm. take care of them.
Yeah. I love John Oliver because I feel like he does that. Like, I'm also a fan of Samantha Bee, which, if you don't have cable like I don't, you can always catch her on YouTube. And if you subscribe, you can watch most of the entire show.
You can get the gist.
You can get, like, 90% of it. And so that's what I do.
Samantha Bee is a late night show.
She is. She's weekly. She's a weekly late night show. It's something with Samantha Bee. We might have
but
to
Samantha
pause
Bee,
this. To
you know, I love that we have a female hosted. Because,
yes.
You know, getting to the point, we're going to talk about feminism.
Feminism.
Surprise.
What?
As if you haven't had enough of it.
Right. We're going to like
we're gonna plow
in your face.
It's like a snowplow. We're just like pushing it.
Whew. But yeah, Samantha Bee is one of my favorites. She's a little aggressive, so if you're in the middle, she might not be your favorite.
You might be reactive, yeah. But sometimes it's nice.
She's working on it though. She made it very clear that this year she's going to try and reach out, but like, you know, that's not her jam, and that's what I love about her. She speaks truth to power.
You know, even if you don't agree, someone who can speak without bullshit and authenticity, you're like, I don't agree with you, but I can tell that you are owning your words.
Exactly. But what I like about John Oliver's show is he gives you
a good middle ground.
Well, he does what Colbert used to do, which is he would give you an option for if you don't agree with this is how you can take action to it.
Yeah.
Which I think is great. Like every show ends with
anything that's this actionable.
This is how we can resolve it. Like, yeah.
Yes. Like, please do something. And I'll be the first to admit I'm not the best at taking action.
Oh, I'm very bad at it.
I'm trying to be aware of like the little things I can do and the little ways in which I can defend the things that I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun.
Yeah. Including something like this podcast, which is
a
web radio show.
Let's combine books with feminism, with advocacy, with reading and writing.
And just offering a voice. Just offering a voice to people.
We have
people.
Two voices here.
There are three voices, including Chris.
And Chris will probably...
Although he's straight, cis, white, so...
Yeah, he's...
I'm kidding, by
the way. You know, we don't always have control over everything. Oh, jeez. I'm also experimenting with a new Zoom because Chris has been doing audio engineering.
Zoom.
So if I get suddenly quiet, it's because
and if you hear a loud it's me putting down the mic so that I can grab my tea, which is just out of reach.
Oh, shucks.
It was my fault for leaving it just out of reach.
Well, while you grab your tea, I will go ahead and read our poem. Let's start out today with our river writing because I think it feeds the soul and it also will feed our show as we talk about, you know, a lot of books and a lot of ideas. So the poem I chose for us today is by Jane Hirschfield, and she's a new favorite of mine, and it's called Let Them Not Say. Let them not say we did not see it. We saw. Let them not say we did not hear it. We heard. Let them not say they did not taste it. We ate. We trembled. Let them not say it was not spoken, not written. We spoke. We witnessed with voices and hands. Let them not say they did nothing. We did not enough. Let them not say as they must say something. Or let them say as they must say something. A kerosene beauty, it burned. Let them say we warmed ourselves by it, read by its light, praised, and it burned. That's a nice one.
That one is beautiful and also so fucking relevant.
It's I feel like, you know.
Oh my God, it hurt when I heard it the first time because I think that it put to words what I've been feeling.
Would you like to share your words?
I will share my words.
Hooray!
All right, so I suppose it ended with, but I'm going to start it with because I feel like it's more relevant. We saw, but we did not enough. And it burned. Yesterday at the march, I was surrounded by thousands. Young women, strong, loud, proud, active. We shouted anti-Trump slogans and marched. We cheered. We made ourselves heard. With selfies, with funny signs, with safe, easy ways of expression. It was a lot. We were a lot. But enough? I wonder if grand acts are enough to fight off the day by day. That we need to do. Yes, we marched, but will we call? Will we follow through? Yes, some followed through, but will that change anything?
Thank you.
We
witnessed with voices and hands. What is this power to shape reality, worlds, minds, and people blinking in and out of existence? It is like the cone about the tree in the forest. It is without a witness. It crashes or it falls, crashing to the earth. Its moments of light and vibrancy, a thing of the past, another life, another world. Was there sound without a witness? What of a life, a being battered and alone, drifting through life and passing without impact? Was life lived? This person without home, family, friends, voice, without a sound mind. This witnessing, this seeing is perhaps the greatest gift we can give one another. Without judgment, seeing, observing, witnessing. I think upon communities and moments of creativity, lives, ideas, and paths coming into existence, and feeling the honor of being there, of witnessing, voices and hands, the tools of humanness.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was working yesterday, but you were at the march.
I was. I came late, and I think that altered my view of it a little bit because I wasn't there for...
The build up,
and for the people who like got their crack of dawn or like as early as they could, I was the last wave of people. So I was the people who were like, oh, you know, I have all this stuff to do, but we'll show up at like 4. Which, by the way, I'm gonna throw out there was recommended if you registered after January 13th, which I did. So I felt like I was in the right group.
You were following the rules.
Exactly.
Sorry, my levels are like peaking, and I don't know. Well, it doesn't really matter what I'm doing. Chris will have to edit this out. But even far away, even soft. Okay, that's a little bit better. Okay. Let me see if it changes as I'm turning this knob up and down. Your levels are fine. Damn it. I can't figure this out. Well, it's a learning experience, and I'll just hold the mic further away and talk. So I'm in the register.
There you go. So I was in... returning to the conversation. I was in the later group, and, you know, that was both what I was supposed to do according to the website, but also meant that I was with a lot of people who weren't the first to join up. So we were tired, we were getting cold, there were a lot of like issues that I noticed, but it was powerful to be surrounded by women and people and people who like were very passionate about it. But I think I was expecting that like electricity to go through,
something magical.
Yeah, and I didn't feel that. Although what I will say is this, in these months since Trump has been elected, what I've been doing to make myself, I guess, be okay.
Self-care, ladies. Self-care.
I've been going out of my way to be surrounded by people who are making a difference, things.
It's made me really restructure
the
times and places where I choose to be.
Exactly. And I've been trying to surround myself with people who like... God, I don't want to say like, I don't want it to sound like I'm fetishizing. I don't want it to be degrading
of anyone, but someone who doesn't care. It's like, if you don't care, then I don't really need to be.
Exactly. Investing. I'm with people who are fighting and who are fighting for their own identity. So like, I joined like an LGBTQ community, and they just do like a monthly meetup and discussion. Mm-hmm. And I've been going to those, and I have joined like writing groups that are founded by women, women of color in specific. And this movement was something that I felt like was part of it, where it was like, I'm surrounded by people who aren't as represented, who are a representation, I think, of what New York is and what moving to New York is.
Yeah.
And I do it so that I can feel like I'm part of something. And I had a bit of that when I was at the march, but I also had a bit of like, oh, right. This is also a generation of millennials who like there were so many people who stopped the march to take photographs of themselves.
Interesting. I also was surprised to learn how regulated it was in terms of, I guess there's just one plaza in New York, and that the police were like, what's your last name? You can go in at this time, which is, I mean, I think that has value, but it was also strange how controlled it was.
I mean, they weren't doing that for my group, but they had to do it in order for it to be like a legal thing.
Allowed. Yeah. I'm not a fan of like, you know, burning things and like destroying things to make a statement, but it was interesting how they.
Yeah. It's a weird thing about protests.
I guess.
I don't know if it's protests in general or just protests in the past like X amount of years, but you have to, in order to actually do a protest, you have to register with like the government
in New York. I feel like New York is a pretty safe place to be. You know, not always as the news will say. Yeah. And especially in the days leading up to the election, there's some pretty violent acts that's only going to get worse. But on the bigger scale, there's a lot of diversity here and a lot of openness to that diversity. So, yeah, it makes sense that they're like, okay, we've got a lot of people in this city. For anything to happen politically,
well, and
it's got to be organized.
The interesting thing, because I remember in the 80s, this was a bigger issue. I wasn't alive in the 80s, but like I
was a baby.
Learned about it from my mom's. But like there was a KKK demonstration that was going on in a small town, and they had the permits.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got to march. And it was like, look, we know that you're not okay with this, but they got the permits. So they get to march.
Right.
And that's why you get the permits.
That's why you organize. I think also I have a friend, a beautiful friend who was an educator for a lot of years and a community organizer. And she shares this experience of doing a silent protest.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about the power of that, of walking into a plaza where everyone is screaming and yelling and walking in as a crowd in perfect silence and just like creates that balance to the statement of what you're standing for. So, you know, courage isn't always just like roaring and getting in people's faces. Sometimes it's just showing up and standing
in
your, like holding your ground, I guess.
But I also feel like, and this is, I guess, what I was writing about when I heard the poem and when I wrote my response to it, is I think that there's power in things like this march. It was incredibly powerful to see that many people show up, like from all over the world, all over the country. It was amazing. I mean,
and just being connected to it via social media, I was like, the circles of people in my social media are at these rallies. It's and that amazing. Makes me glad.
And it's powerful, and it's a moment in history. And, you know,
you were a part of it.
And I was a part of it. And the joke is that there were more women in one march than there were, or more people in one march than there was at the Trump inauguration.
Yeah, but it's true. it's not
totally
wrong.
True.
But also, fact check your news. Let's make sure we're passing on proper.
Yes,
true.
Yes,
that is a fact. We both verified it. But
also make sure to check news before you verify, because Trump's like media reporter did not agree with that. But the thing is that like that was amazing, and that's beautiful, and that's powerful. Now what are we going to do? And
that's not the end of it.
The Women's March, for people who did participate and might not be aware of this, they have 10 like actions in the next 100 days.
Yes, because so, the 100-day plan, we're going to combat it.
Exactly. So, and it starts off with like sending a postcard, which I intend to do within the next week or so. Mm-hmm. But there are other things that, and you have to not be lazy. Action. And I'm somebody who gets
I'm
lazy.
I'm lazy. No, I totally, I support that. And I also want to, I'm going to plug a video that I watched that I put on social media, but I'll also include in the show notes. And this is something from a woman, Vi Hart, V-I, last name Hart, H-A-R-T. And she talks about action, and she says, you know, find a time, the same time every day or once a week, where you're going to get involved politically. And it starts by just showing up and being like, okay, what can I do? You know, I'm going to think about the issues that matter to me today. Next week, I'm going to think about, you know, the things that I can take action on. I'm going to do some research. I'm going to find out who my political leaders are. So for me, coming from a pretty conservative background where I wasn't really exposed to politics for a lot of my life, even just like taking those first steps can be daunting. So I really appreciate it. It's almost like this political date with yourself to like support values that are important to you in your community at large, because you're part of that community.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I would love to be informed about that, because that's the thing that I find. I get this like giant wave of, okay, I need to do things, and I sign up for stuff,
yeah,
and I register
it's
for
like
things
manic.
And I donate.
It's manic.
And then
nothing.
And then life continues, and then you have to focus on, I haven't done laundry
so
in 3
busy.
Weeks. My
Don't get
room
so
is a mess.
Busy that you forget
what's important, because that's how we let things happen.
Well, my idea for this show was to talk about feminist books, and I thought it could be fun for us to talk about a couple books we've read and a couple books we haven't read. If you're just tuning in, this is Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Yo, what's up?
Love to hear from you. Inkandworm@gmail.com. Not the most professional email, but easy to remember.
I think it's professional.
It's what it's our show is. It's not like
Slutty Bitches 49 or something of that
sort.
That's
my other one. So let me know what books you have read and loved. And also, this is an actionable item. What books are you going to read to further your knowledge, to further your empathy, to further your comprehension of the issues at stake?
Yeah.
That's fun. Let's start with the books we've read.
All right. excuse me. So the one that I wanted to talk about, because I'm in a like desperate stint to reread it, is The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood.
Right? Yep, Margaret Atwood.
Woot. Good on me for remembering that. It's a dystopian future type story where, I'm trying to remember, I read it when I was like 12 or 13, but she gets like the world as we know it gets changed dramatically, and this woman now has to become a handmaiden, which essentially she has to like give be like the sexual surrogate, the child bearer.
There's issues with fertility too, yeah, in this dystopian world,
in this future.
So the fertile women have value but also become kind of
slavish,
invisible too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's powerful and it's beautiful and it's tragic
and taps into
a lot of, I think, what's happening. It's surprising to me how relevant it is, because it came out in the 80s and it was obviously,
yeah, that's something worth mentioning. It came out mid Reagan presidency, and it was, you know, a Margaret Atwood either orchestrated or not, but it came out as kind of a response to the anti-feminist extremist actions of the right wing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and
relevant.
And yet it's still relevant today, what, 30 odd years later? Yeah.
And Margaret Atwood too, like, she's pretty popular, but if you haven't read things by her, she's a wonderful writer.
Yeah.
And very enjoyable reading. So,
oh, and that. What's also important to note is that there's a Hulu series coming out in April about it. So I think it's always good to read the book before the TV series comes out. But it's starring, excuse me for not knowing any of the actors' names, so I'm just going to refer to things that they've done.
The person from
Peggy from Mad Men.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who is also the daughter in West Wing. The.
Okay. Not Westworld.
No. The presidential movie or TV show.
Which I haven't seen. Okay.
It's really good. I started watching it and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And Poussey from Orange is the New Black is also in it, as well as Rory Gilmore from the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah,
is in it. So
Alexis,
there's three.
Bledel.
Yes, Alexis Bledel.
I know
Bledel.
Her name.
And then someone I know apparently has worked on it. I don't know to what extent. Her name
that's
is Rosa.
Fun.
So
to see,
yeah, she's this tall, stunning woman. So I'm really excited to see what she did in it.
Are involved in.
Yeah. So it's and dystopian future deals with women issues, and it's not a book that necessarily spoke about how to fight back, but like what could happen. It makes you realize how quickly something could happen.
And how, and like just accepting things.
And surviving in spite of it.
Yeah. It's a very beautiful book. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And according to my dad, it's, you have to read the book before you see the series. So if you have any interest in the Hulu series,
I would highly
find a
recommend.
Copy of The Handmaid's Tale.
Highly no. recommend. It was also, and I was talking to you about this, I read it while reading The Scarlet Letter.
Yeah,
and
it was the better of the two.
Fan of The Scarlet Letter, but I was so into The Handmaid's Tale.
I think that's an interesting concept too, is just like juxtaposing books can change your relationship to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had one more thing. Oh, I was just going to say, support local bookstores. There's probably 1,000 used copies of The Handmaiden's
Woot.
Tale floating around you in your community right now.
Seriously, go to your
nearest
bookstore.
So go to the used bookstores, go to your local bookstores, order it from them. God bless Barnes & Noble, but you don't have to support them with your pocketbook.
I've been trying really hard, but I keep going to ones that aren't used bookstores. I'm surprised.
That's okay. Local bookstores are good, too.
Well, I'm surprised at how few used bookstores are in my day-to-day crossing, just because when I used to live in the city, it was so much easier.
They were there. Oh. Yeah. Well, find the one you can support. Put your money where your mouth is. Buy local. Just my, you know,
oh, yeah, selfish plugs. No, I completely support it. And you could probably find it for, like, under $5 if you go to a used bookstore.
Depending on where you go, you could probably even get it out of a dollar bin.
Yeah.
My first book that I've read, and I've actually read this book twice, is Little Women.
I love that
book. That was one of the books my dad would made me read before he'd let me watch the movie. And I remember enjoying it, but I felt like I read it maybe when I was 9 or 10, so I'm certain a lot of it went over my head. I reread it when I was 18, and it was a very different experience. But it really taps into powerful women, either supported by men or not supported by men, and, you know, ideas of family and relationship and pursuing things that you believe in. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of classic literature as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's like a female classic from the era that I came from, and I think from the generations before me.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good read. I haven't read it recently, so I do remember it being one of the first books to move me emotionally. No spoilers, but a character does pass away, and even though you kind of see it coming, it breaks your heart, which I always think is valuable because that's true to real life. It's not this idyllic version of a story where everyone ends up happy and okay, you know?
Yeah, that was one of the things that struck me about Little Women. I read like not a Spark Notes, but like kind of...
Quick version.
It was this tiny, tiny book version of it. And I remember not being able to part ways with that tiny, tiny book. So I don't know if it was the entire book in just tiny form or what, but I read it when I was like 7 or 8. And I just remember being encompassed by it. And that was one of the things that struck me about it, was that none of it really shied away from life and from what life could be.
And there's a movie with Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
She's funny.
I'm trying to look.
I bet it's one of her better roles, reflecting back upon her cinematic history. I think that this is probably one of the roles that she just embodied the best. She's kind of a character actress. She kind of does the same thing in all of her films, but in this film it really worked for me.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I like Winona Ryder.
I like her. She just is always Winona Ryder.
She's always Winona Ryder. I feel like Heather's was one that spoke out for me, but that's irrelevant to
me. I haven't seen it. So. Not relevant to anything. Next book you're going to tell me about is Judy Blume.
It is. I realized that I didn't have a second one because we were talking about Bossy Pants. And I was like, oh, yeah, that works. And then I was like, wait, I don't have a second one. So Judy Blume, in general, I feel like is an important book for women to read.
Which I haven't read any of her yet. I'm a failure.
Because Judy Blume gets you... It's not necessarily that Judy Blume is... I don't know how to phrase this. It's not that she's revolutionary, but it's exactly not that she's revolutionary. When you read Judy Blume, it's not about like, oh my God, I never thought of this. It's more like, oh shit, everyone feels this way.
All right.
So like the first Judy Blume book I read was Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which I highly recommend. Yeah. Which deals with like sexuality, with puberty, with
All the heavy stuff. And you're a teenager being like, oh my God, I'm not normal.
But it was little things like your first sexual experience or being sexually attracted to somebody and not knowing why. Or like even being sexually attracted to a degree to your friends and not knowing why. And like freaking the fuck out about it. And then the other one, the one that I wanted to pull up, which was like a revolutionary one. And I just wanted to make sure it was the one that I... I'm aware of, and I'm 90% sure this is it, so I'm gonna just pretend that it is, and if it isn't, I'm sorry.
And you can email us and correct our...
You can be like, bitch, nah. It's called Summer Sisters, and it's this, and I get the two intermingled in my mind because they're very... Judy Blume has a way of writing where it sounds like it's just a diary entry.
Yeah,
so,
it's very accessible.
Yeah, so you often, like, you can intermingle her stories because it's very clearly... her narrator is usually the same voice. But this one is, it's about like a girl through from early high school, I would say, through her early 30s, and her friendship with this one girl, and it deals with them going through kind of their sexual awakening, their first sexual experience. And this is what I mean about one of those books where it's like, oh, everybody feels this way, is there was a section where her and her friend tried kissing each other. Because you're 14, you haven't kissed anybody.
Yeah. Can I practice on you? We're friends, right?
Exactly. And you're like, I kind of want to kiss and I don't know how to do it. And is this what we do? Let's try it.
Yeah.
And it was something where I was like, oh, cool, because I did that. And it's good to know that that's not weird.
I haven't done that yet.
Well, I had like a really close friend in middle school, and
I think that's part of my issue is I didn't really have any close friends growing up. All my close friends came in like post-college.
Yeah, so you missed out on that weird, like, let's experiment with each other.
I did experiment with one of my neighborhood kids, and it was really awkward because that was when I was like 7, and then later I was 16 working at a snow cone shop and his parents came by and they like stood by their car and like kept looking toward me and talking, and I, you know, in my paranoid teenage mind I was like, oh my god, what are they talking about?
They know
and they're talking about how terrible I am that I seduced their son. And it was like the opposite was it always is, and he was older, and I'm sure like I mean I've mentioned it, but I came from a Mormon background, so I'm sure he at some point confessed as he was getting ready to serve a mission, and so it probably came out to his parents and was like, well, you know, kids will be kids.
For me, it was this, me and my friend, we became really close in middle school, and I mean, she's a pretty woman, but we were both really awkward in middle school. She went on to be so much more popular and like socially acceptable than me, I think. But
you stayed
this,
weird.
I stayed weird.
Yay,
I
stayed
weird for life. But at the time we were in that same like, I don't know who we are, et cetera, et cetera. And we were like 13. And I just remember we went into her closet ironically. And
into the closet with you.
Into the closet. And we were comparing bras.
Oh yes. Very important.
And then we kissed
That's
each
relevant
other.
Relevant too. No one wants to talk about bras and how uncomfortable most of them
right,
are, and finding the right bra for your body size
all
and the boob shapes.
Judy Blume agrees with and talks about like if I mean are you there?
We're not
God,
wearing
it's about
a bra altogether.
Periods.
And if you're small, that's fine. If you're big, how to like do that or not do that? All but different sizes.
We ended up kissing each other's boobs, which was weird.
Yeah.
I look back on it now, but like at the time it was like a dare and like a sexual pushback. And this was something that's brought up in Summer Sisters to tie this back to the thing.
Good.
The reason that I brought up this really embarrassing story, even though I could have totally let it go if I had wanted to.
Let's name some names now.
Yeah,
just
let's
kidding.
Go. But it's important because it's part of femininity and being a woman and growing up.
And I think removing shame.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It sounds like from what I know, you were raised in a relatively safe environment as far as sexuality came into play. And I think for a lot of people, their first sexual encounters, and I think this is my case, is like, we're just so filled with shame either before, during, or after.
I would argue mine was safe and not safe. There were elements of it that were
like more information than you were mature enough to handle.
I was, well, it's partially that, it's also partially my dad was really he's machismo, he's a stereotypical father, so he gave me a lot of Nasa, you shouldn't be the one who, like, you need to be the one who says no. Mm-hmm. If you don't say no, men aren't going to respect you. So it was a lot of, hey, sex is fine and sex is a thing that people do, but also always say no.
Consent is hot.
Yeah, but it's a weird thing when you're 12 and you both want it and don't. You're like, I want to make out and feel bodies, but also I was told
I
that
don't.
That's not okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're hard conversations to have, I think, in the sense that every conversation and every person is unique.
Mm.
So God bless the parents that manage that well. Most of them, I think, just get awkward and...
It's a hard thing. It's a hard conversation.
Yeah.
And then shame perpetuates shame, which is never...
Yeah, so you have to resolve your own shame if you want. You don't have to.
Yeah.
I'm bossy, so if you're not used to that by now. Well, let's see. Typical of me, instead of writing down three books, I have... 6 books and 3 books, or instead of 2 and 2.
I was gonna say, wait, what?
Yeah, I love books, and I always get excited when I'm like, oh, I've read that book. And so the next book that I've read, and maybe, I mean, yeah, I've also read The Handmaid's Tale a while ago, so that's was on my list. But the next one I'm gonna talk about is The Bell Jar.
Ooh, yeah.
Classic. I actually listened to it narrated by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal.
Thanks. The names.
The names.
And for me, like, she has this kind of stoic voice that really kind of... she was very, like, blasé about it. Like, and then this happened, and we thought about this, and... It was just like added a feeling that I really appreciated. And I also have an incredible amount of intrigue with mental illness. So this is one of the first books written by a woman about mental illness, which makes it kind of revolutionary. And now a lot of people laud it for that. You know, every book has its problems, but I think this kind of captured really well some of those feelings of deep depression, of not fitting in, to your place in society that a lot of people feel.
Yeah.
And there's like, it ends with kind of a feeling of ennui, of like
I love that term,
like almost boredom, but it's beautiful and poetic. And that's a, I think, similar to Little Women. It's like, it doesn't end with like, oh, and the prince kissed the princess and they went off into the sunset. Like,
yeah,
kind of a feeling. It's a feeling that leaves you a little bit disturbed, which I prefer, because then you get to chew on it and your subconscious gets to process. And yeah,
and you get to put, not necessarily put two and two together, but I feel like it makes everything more realistic. That's what I liked about The Handmaid's Tale, is that it to my recollection, and
oh, Sylvia Plath, by the way, The Bell Jar, Sylvia Plath.
I was thinking, because you put there by women, I was like, oh, it's written by a woman.
Good. A woman wrote it. She is nameless now.
But it was the thing I liked about The Handmaid's Tale as well, is that I don't think it ended.
Are all feminist books?
It could be. I mean, if we're
strange
being
endings.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, there's one book that I was thinking, if we were going to go into the third, that I would bring up, which
do
is
do it.
Oh God. No, I'm going to have to, we're going to just cut out the time of me looking this up.
No, or I can talk. So the last book I had on my list here was The Red Tent, which I found interesting, included in the list that I found. And I'll include the link. It was a Stylist magazine list. The Red Tent, it talks a lot about reproductive like stuff. It's biblical. It's written in biblical times. And I read it, and I just remember thinking of how strange it was, because a woman's role in biblical times is make babies or help all the other women make babies, like not physically make babies, but just like you take care of each other's babies. And but I
babies.
Yeah, I became exposed to it as a result of a doula workshop that I did, a doula training. And as a woman, that's something that you have to understand and address, is the nature of reproductive
reproduction
of health, of responsibility, of choices. Yeah, so I feel like that's a good read in light of reproductive rights being a threat.
The one I was talking about was 10 Days at the Madhouse.
Oh, thank you so much.
I was like going to say that, but I wanted to be sure that was the correct title.
Send me this link.
Yes. It's by Nellie Bly. Bly, B-L-Y. I'm not making that up. but so that one ended somewhat positively, because it did have a change in how mental institutions were
Well, I think that's like the whole, like, I think a lot of, I didn't understand how much hysteria was a part of female history.
Oh my goodness.
In terms of like, if you were a woman who had, you know, your emotions close to the surface, people literally thought you were crazy and would lock you up.
Ooh. Now Nasa has like several others that she's like, oh, awesome. Wait a second. The vibrator slash in the next room.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Which is about that, but it's a play because Nasa and her theatrics. Plays. Which is about, it's I think it's a little fluffy for the material that it's dealing with, which is fine.
Just acknowledge and accept.
Acknowledge and accept. But it's about exactly that. It's about hysteria, and it's by, Sarah Rule. There we go. Nasa didn't have Great. To look that up.
You're so amazing.
Right? But it's about exactly that hysteria and the way that they used to solve it, which was... random ass men giving you orgasms with a vibrator.
Yes.
Your doctors would go all up in there.
I feel like I saw this or a very similarly themed play because my sister's a theater major at Westminster in Salt Lake, which is a pretty prestigious school. And they, you know, like to push the envelope. I remember sitting in the audience with my mom as this guy is very awkwardly like giving a woman an orgasm.
What?
Like not... The play is...
Oh, the play. Yeah, you probably saw it in the next room.
Yes. I'm certain that it doesn't... probably aren't a ton of plays that deal with that specific of content. And, you know, some things are nice to see with your mom and some things are incredibly uncomfortable to see with your mom. And that was oddly both. Because I think I am the person I am sexually, partially as a result of her not being this way. And as a result of that, she's become less restricted, I guess you could say. So it's been a nice thing developing, but it's definitely had some awkward moments. Another awkward moment, just for kicks and giggles, watching Amelie with her. There's a nice scene right at the beginning where lots of people orgasm. If you haven't seen it, it's a beautiful movie.
It is. It's a really good movie.
It's a nice one. It's probably one of my favorites of all time.
Oh my goodness. This is starting me down like a rabbit hole of memory. I'm going to throw one more out there that I don't fully remember the storyline of, and I'm sorry about it, but what?
You read it.
The Yellow Wallpaper, which is a short story by Charlotte Perkins.
I'll read it in an afternoon.
Perkins Gilman. It's really fast. I read it in a 3-hour class. Like, we stopped the class to read The Yellow Wallpaper.
Read it in an afternoon.
It's like so fast. But it's about a woman who gets locked away. It's about a woman who gets locked into her bedroom because her husband thinks that she's dealing with hysteria, and then she goes crazy staring at wallpaper and starts peeling it away because she thinks there's something behind it. But it's an amazing story and just kind of deals with that exact same, like, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, how they dealt with quote unquote hysteria of women, which was essentially just women not being fulfilled by only having one option in their life.
Right.
For a lot of, like, a lot of the times, if you read what this and is, just that's
Victorian
what it was.
Sensibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By being considered crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's wrap up. I have two more books.
Yes.
That I've read.
Right.
That I want to talk about. And do you have more?
I think I'm good right now.
That was the rabbit hole.
That was my rabbit hole.
We're down and through, and now we're in another world.
I think I'm okay. I could continue, but I feel like I'm fine. I've said a lot of books.
Next book, Tina Fey, Bossy Pants.
Yes!
You have some strong feelings.
I do. I liked the book a lot. Well, wait, you should talk about you, because you're the one who read it.
Well, you read it too, which is why we're talking about it. pretty iconic in terms of like modern books by women who are successful at what they do. Mm-hmm. Really, you know, kind of... targets the idea that women can be funny in general. And I really like Tina Fey. I like her humor. I acknowledge that she's got some perspectives that aren't necessarily fully in alignment with what I agree
she's
with.
She's from the old school.
But you know, I appreciate where she came from and what she's done with that. Career, family, balancing, and supporting your female friends and working your ass off for something you want.
Yeah, and she worked through a lot. I mean, a lot. She wasn't... Yeah. ever the popular girl or anything of that sort.
So I feel like it's synonymous to her on screen in the sense that it's pretty accessible, it's pretty enjoyable reading, and it also you know, creates the opportunity to talk about some issues.
Yeah.
So
what I was talking about with my feelings about it was there's the one chapter where she talks about how there was this promotion that was available and her friend who was also a female told her about it. And this was an older friend, like an older woman. And she was really passionate about what that promotion would be. And Tina Fey acknowledges that this was a shitty thing to do. I should like clarify.
Yeah, she's aware.
She was like, I know this was really shitty, but she took that promotion from her friend and took it for herself, used it for how long she needed it, and then left.
Mm-hmm.
Which is shitty, but also like it's weird because it's not feminism in the way we think of feminism right now, which is like
it's like a self-interest
we
move.
Need to, yeah, nowadays it's like what feminism is about supporting other women and being there for other women. But this was feminism in the way of the way that I think that we're taught men are supposed to think about promotions and things like that, where it's like it's a dog eat dog world, baby. Yeah. You take what you need and you move.
Hence the title Bossy Pants.
Exactly. And it's useful because it gives you, not necessarily gives you permission, but sometimes if you do something that's underhanded like that and you think like, oh, I'm the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also you needed that to move forward.
Yeah. It's a step that you took. Last book I wanted to mention because I saw it and it is a book that I've read and loved. It's by Caitlin Moran and it's called How to Be a Woman. And she's British and I absolutely adore this book because it encounters all the fumbling awkwardness of growing into a woman and talks about, you know, the physical aspects of that in terms of like clothing and hormones and just, you know, I think similar to Bossy Pants, it's about a woman finding her place in a world and an industry that was not really welcome to women.
Yeah.
I think she's a music journalist. Don't quote me on that. I read this 4 years ago, maybe. But it definitely, my process is I read really quickly and then I don't remember a lot of the content, but I do remember whether I loved the book or not. And this one I definitely remember loving. So
good.
There you go. Those are the books we've read. We love actionable items, so we're going to assign ourselves homework to read some more books that are feminist.
Although I'm rereading Handmaid's Tale, Handmaid's Tale, so I should...
Two for one. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Are you going first?
Oh, sure. The one book that I really want to read, and I generally want to look for a book about females in leadership and like how to take that space, and I was recently part of a writing project / encouraging group where they had brought up these really great books and I of course remember none of them, so I googled as you do boss, like female boss books. So I found one that looks really cool called You Are a Badass: How to Stop Doubting Your Greatness and Start Living an Awesome Life by Jin Sincero, which is an appropriate last name. Filled with inspiring and entertaining stories of her own personal failures and successes. This book is career focused, but the elements of the book can be applied to your personal life as well. Advice like procrastination is the easiest form of self-sabotage. So these are things that
procrastination is the easiest form of self-sabotage. I think that's worthy of repeating.
Right?
Especially,
I don't know, for me.
Yeah. Well, I think it throws back to the laziness. It's easier to do nothing and be like, well, someone will do something.
Exactly. And especially when you're trying to
shoulder part of the responsibility.
Put yourself into...
Well, I mean, which is depleting. You have to acknowledge, you know, if you have too many outputs for your energy, it's not sustainable.
Yeah. But
it is nice to be like, okay, I can sit down and do something. I don't need to procrastinate.
Yes, exactly. And especially when you're trying to like build an empire or do something that's hard. I'm trying to become a successful actress and that is fucking hard.
That's the one.
That's fucking hard.
My first assignment is a book by Virginia Woolf because I've read Virginia Woolf, but I haven't read this book and it's kind of her iconic book, A Room of One's Own, talking about women and the need for feminine discourse in literature. I love her writing in general. I feel like she has like barbs of poetry that kind of just like jump out at you as you're reading. And you're just like, oh, that was so beautiful to read. You want to reread the sentence or the paragraph just because it's lovely. So many beautiful words put together in just the right like order and rhythm. And so I feel like in terms of reading, it's nice that way.
Mm.
And so I'm going to read A Room of One's Own and and step into my female writer personhood.
That's great.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, this was almost on my list. I'm so glad you're...
Oh, good. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou, which Maya Angelou's autobiography,
Nasa, the one?
Mainly deals with how knowledge and strength of character can help one overcome racism and abuse.
Pretty heavy stuff.
Pretty heavy stuff. Also good for if you're trying to build yourself up or trying to do something with your, like, trying to push yourself forward in your life. Mm-hmm. Because I know for me recently, I've come to realize that a lot of my hardships are centered in, are grounded in poverty, in the poverty of my family and in my racial background and what that has meant for me.
Identities.
Yeah, exactly. What that, what's the word I'm looking for where it's like a thing that you pass on to generations.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was passed on to me, bequeathed to me, so to speak,
sure.
From my previous generations.
There's a word for it.
There is inheritance.
There you go.
The inheritance of my ancestry is the fact that I don't belong anywhere, and the struggle of that, the struggle of lower middle class, the struggle of ethnically diverse, and how that has benefited me and not benefited and harmed me.
Yeah, and just building an awareness.
Yeah.
So you can change it.
And rather than just being bitter about it and being like, well, I give up.
We're going to read some Maya Angelou.
Going to read some Maya Angelou and
take action.
Make me move forward.
There you go. My last book, Self-Assigned Homework, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, because I loved that movie growing up, and I think I need to read it.
Yeah, I've heard such good things.
So those are our homework assignments, and we'll report back, and please let us know what you're self-assigning.
Yes.
If you're just catching the end of this show, you can find us on Audioboom, Stitcher, and iTunes under Ink and Worm.
Ink and Worm.
And email us your thoughts, inkandworm@gmail.com. This is Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. And we're going to catch up on some quick rapid fire questions.
Oh my goodness.
Because it's been so long.
It's been so long.
Nasa, what's your latest Netflix addiction?
Oh my God. Okay, so not Netflix, but I just finished streaming. Amazon Prime show called Man in the High Castle.
I've heard of this. It's so good.
So good. But it's also, I mean, it's not great. There were a lot of problems with it. There were a lot of problems, but I kept coming back because it's really entertaining. And they're trying. They're trying their way through.
Yeah.
But the thing that's like powerful is that I keep feeling like I'm in this alternate universe. So it's an alternate universe of if the Nazis had won the war, and the Japanese had won the war. And I keep thinking like that must be the world I'm in right now. So if you're ready for some post-apocalyptic type stories, Man in the High Castle, baby, how about you?
Westworld.
Oh my goodness. Wait, we need to talk.
I actually did not like it the entire way through, and even the last episode I was like, I just wasted hours of my life. But then days went by and weeks went by, and oh my God, it is sticking with me.
Yes.
Jesus, it's so I can't throw out opinions because I still don't know what I think about it, but I definitely watched it all and I definitely keep thinking about it.
Those are, I think, the most powerful. So I guess I'll ask you a question. What book are you putting off reading?
A book about, are we smart enough to know how smart animals are?
Oh,
talking about, if you test intelligence in, it's like IQ testing. If you're testing someone's intelligence with a skill that they don't have, then they don't have the skill. It's not a reflection of their IQ. So when it comes to animals, how do you put yourself in their world to test what they do?
Mm-hmm.
Are we smart enough to do that?
Ooh.
I've started the book twice.
That's powerful. That's also terrifying because that's going to reevaluate your own life.
It's very like enjoyable reading because it pushes questions of curiosity, you know, experiments done with chimpanzees and elephants and things that they can do that we could never come close to. And also this competitive nature, you know, of memory, things that are specific to food gathering and resource like awareness that we don't have, but they came out with a game that initially, like, I think chimpanzees were winning, and then this group of people became obsessed with getting better at this game than the chimpanzees were. It's like, why Isn't that so strange?
That's insane.
Like, why do we have to be better than them? It's a skill that they have that we haven't cultivated because we live in this modern world, and yet we're still like, oh, we have to be better than them at everything.
Yeah.
Because they're animals, and we're not animals. Guys, we're animals.
We're animals. Yes. Maybe they're just better at existing than
we are.
What book
are you avoiding?
I'm not going to say I'm avoiding it, but it's been 2 weeks since I said it. I mean, I'm bringing this back to what we were talking about. Oh, no, I forgot to talk about that.
That's okay. We can mention it.
Okay, cool. I was going to say The Handmaid's Tale, because I've been trying to reread it. But we just brought up a book that I forgot to mention.
Nisa has a book that I'm borrowing, so.
Yes.
An official third book on my list.
It's like sixth book. It's called Delta of Venus Erotica by Anise Nin.
I've heard good and bad. A lot of people I know and love liked it, and a lot of people I know and love did not like it.
Some parts of it are a little bit boring. Some parts of it are very inappropriate. I mean, obviously it's a sex book, but like some of it goes
erotica
into, like,
inappropriate.
What? I mean, there's one story where a guy plays on children.
I've read this and it's disturbing.
Yeah.
But it's a fetish that people actually have. So isn't it better to read about it than actually do it with
someone? Also that he's not
going
after the kids. It's the fact that they're innocently.
Okay. So, oh God, we only have 2 minutes. We better keep with our rapid fire.
Oh no.
But there's a story by her. I know what you're talking about. You could probably Google it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty interesting.
Oh yeah. But I highly recommend this book for confronting your sexuality.
All the aptitudes.
Being comfortable in sexuality as well. So
huzzah.
Huzzah.
Nisa, you're in a clown class.
I am.
I'm curious about maybe something that you've learned recently that's been like a new light or new discovery.
So it's not that it's new, but it's something I'm discovering about myself that's relatively new. I've failed in clown classes many times before because for clowning, you have to commit to being a fool. You have to commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this time around, I found that I can tap into that side of myself. I can go up and sing in front of the class. I can make a fool of myself. I can do things that I'm not comfortable doing.
I think I could echo that really fast before the end of our show, in the sense that I just did a dance for the Bushwick Book Club, which makes me incredibly uncomfortable, but I keep doing it because I know that while it's hard, it's helping me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You just have to like step and push into that discomfort until it becomes comfortable.
Precisely. And just acknowledge that you're not going to be perfect.
And
so
be
you might as well be good, as good as you can be.
You're the only you can bring to the table. So you might as well just like embody yourself and be you.
Just commit to doing. And if people think you're weird, you're in a fucking clown class. How normal are they?
Exactly. We might need to like throw in some Spice Girls because they were my jam as a teenager.
Oh my God, yes.
That's funny. Let's all listen to Spice Girls together. Girl power. Thanks for listening to Ink and Worm. Well, actually, you know, I don't have a word yet, so this is going to take a minute. Any last thoughts, Miss Nisa?
I was about to talk more about the clown class. It's a clown scene study class. I highly recommend it. It's with Gabriel Levy. Or anything with Christopher, Chris
with somebody.
Barnes, I want to say. Oh, no, I'm so bad.
Well, you can send it to me. I'll throw it in the notes. If you are curious and you can't find it, email me, inkandworm@gmail.com. This has been Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn, and we'll catch you next week. And I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Bobbery.